What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
It's weird, we don't often think of the algorithm for Kickstarter, but the more and more I hear people talk about their campaigns, there still is one.
I like negative feedback. I like knowing if something missed the mark. But what do you think about this as somebody who's building their channel?
Really what I'm trying to do is like, hey, this is my recommendation, but it is literally geared toward if you have A, B, C, D lined up and that's all similar to me and that's why I got this. I just want to be very specific with my advice at the end of the day.
This one is, it must be for you, Dan, because I can't imagine it would be for both of us. What is the longest time you've ever peed? Here's one of the final ones. This is also from James. This one's real. This is a heady question. Which is the worst of the seven deadly sins? Do you have a go-to worst sin straight away? You have entered the Create Unknown. I'm Matt Tabor. I'm usually here with Kevin Lieber, but I have a little bit of news. There are a lot of options, and I want everybody listening live to choose the option that they think is reality. Kevin has been in prison in the past for sardine fishing, illegal sardine fishing. Is he back in sardine prison? Have I finally killed him to wear his skin and pretend to just live his life until I'm found out? That's a valid option. Is it A or is it B? It's not either of those two things. But oh, that's the third one. If you haven't seen his latest Vsauce 2 video about whether a toothpaste sandwich can actually brush your teeth as you eat it, there's a point in it when we talk about tooth whiteners. He talks about tooth whiteners where... it's about the Romans using urine, the ammonia in urine, to whiten teeth. And he drinks what appears to be urine. It's actually apple juice. But let's say he got pee poisoning. That's a good C option, isn't it? So he's back in sardine jail. He is a victim of a terrible crime for me. Or he's succumbed to pee poisoning. A, B, or C. We just had a thing where Kevin had to skip out minutes ago. And I mean minutes. One of those like non-emergency emergencies, something you've got to deal with straight away, but isn't like life-threatening or anything. So that means I am with Dan Yoshua, who has worked with us on the production side for a while now. Like, what has it been, 6 months?
I think since August.
Yeah, maybe more than 6 months. And I wanted Dan to jump in and talk to everybody with me here, which that's the format today. The format is going to be talking with the episode chat. We got a few things to discuss. We got a few things YouTube related to discuss, but then we're going to roll with it. We haven't done that in a while. Dan is awesome here because he really has lived out a lot of the things that we have talked about where He wanted to go independent on the creativity side, you know, and has been through a little bit of a journey on that in 6 months. So Dan, what is that path been?
Sure. And the first time I talked to Kevin, remember that life emergency that was non-threatening that put me on the spot? Yeah, thanks for that,
yeah.
is what I'll be saying to him. yeah, so I think I started with you guys before I had quit my day job, kind of a nights and weekends thing. By schooling, by trade, I'm a data analyst and did that for about 7 years. And at some point, I wanted to jump pretty strongly into the creative stuff. And, you know, obviously 2020 was a weird year for everybody. And it's kind of a weird year to take a jump from, you know, a full-time job that I was able, you know, fortunate enough to have in December still. But then to step away from that, it just was kind of the right time for me. I had been thinking about doing this for a long time. And, you know, at some point I had enough saved and squirreled away that it was time to give it a try with a couple part-time gigs that I had. And I felt like I had a couple months runway where I could give it a go.
Yeah, that's cool. It's a lot like what Sumet said, Sumeto Media, back when we talked to him, where it's like, yeah, he had a good job. He was good at his job. He didn't, you know, really hate his job to the point where it was driving him insane. He just wanted to do something else. And so he took, you know, he did that for years. He got a little money together, waited until he was in a position where he could make a good run at it. And then, well, he tried to quit and wasn't able to. They kept extending his quit date, but he's finally out now. But that's a good way to play it. And specifically, what are the kind of verticals that you're focusing on? Because media is a big place.
Yeah, that's a great question. Primarily photography, but more and more so, I make some of that freelance money through podcasting. And so just this month picked up a few others, you know, now that I'm non-exclusive TCU, I hate to break that on the air here.
I didn't actually know this.
Yeah, I know. Surprise.
It's a mix of excitement and betrayal.
Yeah. It turns out helping on podcasts is a really great way to get into kind of anything creative, right? It's if you're not involved with the production, it's largely remote. And so that's a great benefit to be able to mix that around, you know, on-site photography, for instance, or just to do that on the side as you're doing your full-time role before you make that transition. So that's why it was super awesome to help you guys out and why it's going to be super awesome continuing to pick up that type of work for me, at least.
Yeah. And Ben, producer Ben, who does all the editing and stuff now, he's honestly got a really similar story where it's like, yeah, you help some people out, you do a few things, it works out, you do more, and eventually, you know, you've got a good thing rolling. And you guys are in two very different places in life. He's quite a bit younger.
Yeah, but it's he's paid 8 years off ahead of
tremendously.
Me.
In a way, he is, and that has its own pluses and minuses. But it's paid off for him just tremendously with like gaudy, shocking financial aid for university.
I can imagine.
Like, it should be illegal for somebody to be awarded that much money on their merit. But he has done it successfully. And yeah, it's just cool to see so many people we know, whether they are infants, toddlers, like Ben, somebody who's in the middle of things like you are, somebody like Sailing Doodles, who is our age, you know, quite a bit further in the game, make the switch. Like Food for Dogs. You know, I don't know how old Britta is. I just know she's older than us. But she certainly had like 30, 40 years of solid career before she made the switch. So truly, that should be the title of our Create Unknown book, is like creativity from fetus to grave. Like everything in between those two bounds is perfectly valid.
Where do I reserve my copy and will you sign it?
I will. I bet Kevin declines that one. He'll be too
busy. He skips that book signing
to put his name on those.
He has an urgent, non-life-threatening emergency that day. Yeah.
This is your inflection point if you're listening, though. If you're live, too. This is the point at which you decide. Are you a listener of The Create Unknown? Are you a fan of The Create Unknown? Or are you just here for the international wanted criminal, Kevin Lieber of Vsauce 2? This will determine whether you continue or not. So choose wisely. We hope to see you at the end of this. And I think what we need to start is Andrew Bowser. He was the last episode we released because we had to take a week off. We talked Kickstarter with him, and I will be honest, when we talked to him, it was around 348,000 out of the 500,000 he needed. He had about 10 days to go, and I was skeptical that he was going to make it, because that's a lot of money to make in 10 days. You know, he has a big audience, he knows a lot of people, but he's not, you know, PewDiePie in that he can activate 100 million nine-year-olds overnight. Well, he crushed it. And with like 6 days to go, people came out of the woodwork, from big donors to small donors. A lot of people in the Discord donated. I know Tom Videoger was the first. I forget who just did a day ago. They got in close to the end. I did, Kevin did, Jake Vsauce 3 did. But yeah, he made it. He's over 500,000. That movie is going to happen. He's got his stretch goals. Dan, did you think, as we were talking about it with him, because you were listening in live?
I was.
What did you think was going to happen? Be honest, too. Like, if you thought he wasn't going to make it, you can say he wasn't going to make it.
So researching ahead of that episode was the first time that I was kind of introduced to him and Onyx and that whole thing. And so I think, you know, frankly, that's part of the reason I love working with the show is because I get exposure to all these wonderful creators that I haven't, that I'm kind of on the periphery of when I'm doing kind of my photography and video stuff. And then that's a big goal on Kickstarter, or, you know, any fundraising effort. But on Kickstarter, that's even by Kickstarter standard, that's a big goal. And I don't know that I had at that point a feeling one way or the other, but I knew enough to say to myself, that's, you know, he's close and it's going to be tight. And then he had that monster day. Maybe the Monday after we recorded, it was just absolute bananas for him. 100,000 in a day or something?
Was it the Monday? It was a Monday, or I feel like it was the Wednesday, because it definitely was the day after we released the episode to patrons, which I'm not saying there's a correlation there. I'm not saying that the patrons of the Create Unknown raised $150,000 for Andrew Bowser overnight, but I'm not saying it didn't happen either.
But you're not saying it. I understand.
That's right. I'm just saying, isn't it a coincidence that these two things happened in tandem? But yeah, if he was at 450 when we talked to him, then I'd be like, hey, 90% of the way there, final stretch, this is definitely going to happen. But yeah, it's exciting. You know, we talked about Kickstarters with Rusty Cage. You know, he's done them on his Requiem for the Crazies series. And his goal, I think, was 10,000 for this latest one, which he explained in the episode that wasn't actually where it needed to be. He just wanted to successfully fund it and have a high percentage, because then it will boost him on Kickstarter to be like 250% funded, you know?
I've heard more of that recently, that's kind of, it's weird. We don't often think of the algorithm for Kickstarter, but the more and more I hear people talk about their campaigns, there still is one, right? And it's hitting that front page. And apparently that's one of the better ways to do it, is to set that lower goal than what you need, which to me is inherently a little bit risky, because on Kickstarter, if it's funded, it's funded. And so it would be weird to go back to your Kickstarter backers and say, we hit our goal and we're only, you know, halfway there.
You're right about the Kickstarter science, though. That's definitely a massively important thing. There are places that specialize in it. I actually went to Yerevan in Armenia for a few weeks in 2019 before COVID, and spent a few weeks with a group there that's what they do. They run crowdfunding campaigns worldwide, and they're very, very good at it. They get products funded that are kind of wild. They had an electric bike that was quite different than what's on the market now. That was just getting funded. Then some of the little things, you know, like household items that are cool that need 1,000 orders to go into production. Sure. They did it all. And since we're talking about correlations, I want to tell you that when I was there, I was there at the same time as Kim Kardashian. We were at the same event. She's Armenian by heritage, and so she was going to talk at this event. I was in the same room with Kim Kardashian, and we made eye contact for probably a few thousandths of a second.
Not and that you were keeping track.
Then, yeah, I measured it as closely as I could. But then, you know, 18 months later, it seems that she's separating from Kanye. I'm not saying these two things are correlated, but I'm not saying it.
Right. No, I get it. I mean, I'm gazing upon you as we speak. I totally understand.
But yeah, it's great to have talked to a couple people now. Very recently, you know, Rusty was episode 81-ish, plus or minus, right?
Yeah, I should know. I should be able to pull that up, but...
Chat is doubting me. We have Tabor officially delusional. It hurts to read this. That's it funny. Hurts even more to have to say it into the mic, but here we are. Yeah, it's cool that we've talked to people recently who...
Oh, wow. 75. Not to interrupt. 75. You were off by a little bit there. Episode 75.
Oh, wow. It was that long ago.
Yeah.
Oh, well, he funded successfully by a lot. Andrew has. It's awesome. I'm sure we're going to talk to somebody soon enough who's got one going. And I like their chances. Have you contributed to Kickstarters in the past or GoFundMes or anything like that?
I have. I've actually...
Indiegogo. That's what I'm talking about. Not GoFundMe. Indiegogo.
I've done Kickstarter, Indiegogo. My brother and I actually ran a Kickstarter toward the end of my college days. It's very, very tiny for kind of to fund some software apps. We were into some indie game making for iOS and Android. And we set a goal, I think, of like $1,000. And it was largely friends and family. But we made it. And that's how we, you know, funded our LLC for the next 3 years while we continued to make $0.
Yeah, but you didn't have to pay for those filing fees. Like, that's significant.
And in those days, you know, you're in college, you can't, you don't have that kind of spare cash necessarily. Some people do, but we certainly didn't. And because of that, I tried to make an effort. You know, if any of my friends or even acquaintances are running stuff like that, I try to chip in, even if it's on the lowest tier, like, oh, thank you. Because I just remember, you know, there's so much pressure that hits the goal. And it was so cool that we did. And even knowing that, you know, we didn't have a whole bunch of randos funding the thing, it was like, okay, either way, we're just pumped that we get to continue this without having to, you know, save up and blow a ton of money on it. So I try. I think it's a great platform.
Even a dollar or two carries juice, like you said, with, you know, the boost on the website with the algorithm there. That's awesome. It's huge on the confidence of the people doing it, you know. You think about it with the Create Unknown, the $2 tots, you know, like nobody's paying their mortgage or office rent with $2. At the same time, it is a tremendous, tremendous boost to how you feel about the project, to your motivation for doing it, and all those little contributions add up. So I like it. If you see a thing that you enjoy, yeah, $2 to Andrew Bowser is not getting him really close to 500,000 when he needs 150,000, but it absolutely matters whether it's in that algorithm, whether it's a confidence thing. And you can also feel good about the stuff you're doing. I totally forgot that a guy I know, TJ Nelson, funded a documentary that's now on Amazon. You can watch it on Amazon Prime. So TJ put his documentary up there, The Last Stop. Let's see how the ratings are going, because it was, 4.1, 271 reviews about the Elan School. But yeah, he had this community that wanted a film made. He put it up there. Those people wanted to see that project happen, and they made it happen. It's an exceptional documentary. It's just great to see these things funded. So congratulations, Andrew Bowser. Congratulations to Onyx the Fortuitous, and we look forward to seeing this movie.
Perhaps they come back on before the release.
Oh,
I don't know.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. Yeah, I like that. And maybe even when the pre-release drops, if it's available, you know, that people could get their hands on a stream, you know, pre-sale kind of thing. That's cool. I like it. I'll tell you what I dislike.
Hit me.
It's a button. It's called the dislike button. Did you see what happened on YouTube with this dislike button?
I have seen. I haven't checked my own account. As far as I understood, they were rolling that out slowly. potentially?
Yeah, it's in some beta kind of thing. I don't know who's got it and who doesn't, but yeah, you've got a channel, and likes and dislikes matter.
That's generous, but thank you.
Oh, it's growing quite quickly. Like, being able to see this from zero on the way up, your pace is enviable. So we'll pop that link in the description. It's too bad Tom isn't here right now to link it in the episode chat. But
don't worry, but yeah, I have it on my control V. YouTube. It's what lives on my clipboard all day.
You have it tattooed on the side of your neck so you can just pull your shirt down and show people.
Yeah.
So, YouTube, they say that for the mental well-being of creators, due to years of feedback about this, they will be removing the dislike button from videos, but it's unclear what's happening. The dislike button is there. The count of dislikes is what won't show.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that nuance.
Yeah. So if your video has 10,000 likes and 4,000 dislikes, we, the audience, will only see those 10,000 likes. I don't know if you'll be able to see the dislikes in the dashboard, but publicly, you won't be able to see them. Andy, in the episode chat, asks the number one question here is, how are we supposed to dislike YouTube Rewind? You know, that's kind of what did it. We even did an episode on that in the early days. Like, was that 2018? That might have been 2018.
Oh, that's an eternity ago.
Yeah, it was like in the teens in episode numbers. Yeah, Dan the Latch says 2018 about the YouTube Rewind. What's next for them? Well, we kind of hypothesized that this kind of thing would happen. But we're in a different spot than you are, right? And I say we as in Vsauce 2, the Vsauce channels like that. I like negative feedback. I like knowing if something missed the mark, if a substantial percentage of the audience dislikes something. I like being able to quantify that. It's a really important thing to take back into your process. But that's a different position than somebody who is kind of early in the game. Somebody like you, Dan. What do you think about this as somebody who's building their channel?
I'm a little bit that's too early to say that I'm upset. I would hope that you can see that within the Creator Studio. And
okay, so you want to know.
I want that feedback because, you know, I know some people, I'm sure, that are larger, get videos that just get ganged up on, right? At some point that dislike starts to just, it's a ticker that you can't stop. I get that. And I imagine that that could be and would be at some point tough mentally just to kind of reconcile, right? So like that's not lost on me, but I'm like you, I want to know that if this video isn't hitting the mark, you know, what's happening there on the dislike counter. But it's also weird because if a video completely misses, it's just going to get killed. It's not even going to get shown to the point where it would get dislikes. So in my mind, it's like, if you are racking up many dislikes, it's because it's getting shown to people, and it's getting shown to people because YouTube knows that people are watching it for a given duration. So it is intriguing in that respect. I would be, as a data analyst by trade, I would be super interested to see like aggregate data from YouTube, what happens percentage-wise to dislikes moving forward based on this move. Like, I wish I could be the product manager behind the choice to change that and see how that percentage changes across videos. That's kind of my take. But it'll be neat to see kind of reactions. I haven't dug too deeply into this in terms of reading about the change, but I'd be interested to see how other people feel. Do you have an early sense yourself? Like, are people celebrating this or kind of torn? Or
it's tough for me because I don't follow a totally broad range of people on places like Twitter. It's pretty narrow. It's people relevant to Vsauce stuff. It's people in the Create Unknown community,
right?
And then it's just people I happen to be friends with or whose content I like. Well, that heavily biases everything, you know, to funnel
into
like palatable things for Matthew Tabor. This is not a broad cross section. So the people I know overwhelmingly thought this sucked. You know, Rusty Cage had a tweet about it that Team YouTube actually replied to.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a very good one. But yeah, I mean, it's unclear what is going to happen here, whether it's going to slam that data in your face in the studio anyway. People do get piled on. There are engineered group dislikes that happen to people for really bizarre reasons. Not so much in the educational community, not so much in the podcast community. We don't, you know, we're a little bit insulated from that kind of thing. Does it happen in the makeup and beauty community? Yeah, it's all over drama and commentary and all that stuff, which you'd almost expect.
Right.
But I'll tell you who had a really good take on this. Jabrils, who was on with Kevin on Stereo. And by the way, all the people in the Create Unknown community who came out for the Stereo conversations, it's a really cool platform where you can ask audio questions live. And Kevin really liked piping people in to do that. And some of you guys asked shockingly good questions. Well, the first one he did was with Jabrils. So Jabrils tweeted that he's, you know, somebody who learned to code online and learned a lot of those types of things online. When he was looking for tutorials, it was incredibly useful for him to see the amount of dislikes on a tutorial. If it had 700 likes and 1,200 dislikes, he's not going to choose that one. He knows that it's probably not what he wants. Okay. That was really interesting because I hadn't thought in terms of something like selecting tutorials, selecting something that's authoritative. You know, let's say it's a history video. Well, if it's completely wrong, it might have a whole bunch of dislikes. So it can open up abuse, possible abuse. That sucks. I'm glad that those people can have something done about it. But it really removes a piece of authority that's a testament to your content being good and your content being useful. Seeing that ratio of people who enjoy a thing versus do not enjoy a thing, that's pretty big. And people in the episode chat, I see Jeff says that hiding the dislikes is dumb. You guys, seriously, weigh in on this. We want to read it out. We want to know what you think on it. But yeah, Dan, you're a data guy. I can see why you would want to take any and all data to use and improve and make actionable.
Yeah, and another thing I'll add is, you know, if I had that omniscient point of view where I could see how some of those aggregate data trends changed, I would love to see what happens with the volume of comments following this on any particular video. Because I know comments, at least on the mobile experience, and this would be, you know, a great question just to ask you. Oh. For me, when I'm on YouTube, I am strictly watching it on the computer. It's 95% of my consumption is on the big screen. I rarely watch on my phone. And, you know, while I start to try and create more, I even watch less. But on the mobile experience, comments are pretty tucked away. So,
Yeah, you got to like solve a puzzle to get them to display.
You got to enter your password. You got to unlock the key. And as much as I want to see the dislikes as a creator, I can only do so much with those. I have to do a lot of guessing about why I think that particular video was disliked. I don't necessarily have actionable feedback. A comment, that qualitative data, is typically more valuable. And I'm at the size, obviously, where I can read through all of them if I wanted to. And I do, because it's, you know, it's a handful per video. It's nothing crazy. And so I can do that, you know, quote, aggregation in my head when I get, you know, negative or constructive comments. I can roll that up to a general sense in my mind and I know what to improve. Or I don't want to say that I necessarily take every comment to heart. I know what I could improve if I were to evaluate that feedback as hitting home with me, right? Careful to make that differentiation. But I would...
It can help you rank those things, like prioritize the things that you improve too.
Of course. So it would be cool for me, I would like to see other small creators get more comments coming out of this change. Mm-hmm. I'm not convinced that will necessarily be the case, but that would be cool to see, I think.
I have a question for you on this. If you're taking away the ability to show your public disapproval of something via the dislike button, are they just driving more people to leave critical, shitty comments?
That
it's
is
the
a great
only
question.
Recourse, yeah. The only way you can express your displeasure at the accuracy of a video or, you know, whatever somebody said. All you could do now is leave them a comment telling them explicitly why they suck. How is that better? How is that better for the mental health of creators than showing a number like 782?
I will say, like, I overwhelmingly have positive comments, and that's because my audience is so small and I'm doing like lens reviews and like showing off my pictures.
Yeah.
Like, you can only say so many damaging things, or if you did, like, I would know not to take that to heart. I do worry. That is a great point, I think, because if someone's putting out stuff that's a little bit more personal, and you're going to get a lot more critical kind of knucklehead comments from that archetype of person that expects free content, you know, just to consume all day long and reply negatively to. I think that could be a problem. And I think that's why I would love to see YouTube kind of report out on what they find with this. You know, I don't expect them to, but that would be cool as a data analyst.
Yeah, they don't release a whole lot of data on this stuff because they don't want people, you know, gaming a thing.
Yeah.
But let's make this highly specific, okay? And I actually thought of something that you could potentially make a video on and that I know enough about to pose the scenario to you. So a very popular lens for Canon cameras is one that Dan and I were talking about a couple weeks ago, the 50 millimeter Nifty 50. Mm. It's about $100. It's a great lens for the money. You could do a lot of things with it. People really like this lens when they're getting started because they can dip their toe in into lenses without spending, you know, $1,000 on some monstrous thing. So Dan, let's say you make a video that is about how the Canon Nifty 50 is overhyped. Don't waste your money on it. It's stupid to celebrate this thing. I disagree with that. 2 weeks ago, I can click dislike on the video. Now, what happens? I'm forced to leave a comment saying you don't know what you're talking about. You're not an expert on these things. You're stupid in 17 different ways. How's that feel? All you wanted to do was tell the truth about a lens.
In that case, you know, I think I'd reply to that comment with something like, "Oh, you only found out 17 ways in which I'm stupid. Tricked you."
Well,
I mean,
that's,
you know,
kind of the best you can do. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the snarky response if you want to do something like that. But in that specific scenario, that opens a dialogue for me, like, as a creator, why do you think this lens is so shitty, and what makes you, and why do you immediately jump to, you know, the next step up, the 50 millimeter f1.2, which costs, you know, 20 times as much. At least it's specific. You know, I guess I still don't mind that comment in that scenario, but
I like that. I like that approach where even if they're driving a dislike to become a rotten comment, that's still an opportunity to engage and pull some value. And you've got to remember, like, people online, whether it's a tweet with replies, whether it's a Facebook post, Instagram photo, YouTube video, the exchanges and the comments are not actually about the commenter. They're about the many, many more people who are witnessing and reading the exchange than they are about the one person involved. That's absolutely critical. So I used to do some policy back and forth. This is boring, so I won't go into it. But it was never about arguing with the person who liked the other position. It's not that. It's, you know, you're making your case to the 50 people who are going to read it, not the one ding dong who's on the other side of the thing.
That is a great point. And like, if we care to spend any more minutes on diving into like the specific of lenses, I did have a comment recently. You know, I reviewed one of Canon's new like budget super telephoto lenses, right? And so,
okay. And what is budget? Like for the people who have only a thin sense of this.
So
what are we talking?
Budget in this case, I think the new price is maybe $800, but it's like,
What is not budget then?
The budget is the Nifty 50. non-budget would be, so for a lens that would shoot as far with and give you the equivalent reach, a non-budget lens would literally cost thousands of dollars. You know, think price of a used car.
Okay.
And so Canon did this thing where,
so 90% off is a hell of a jump down.
Sure. And the like the biggest professionals that are shooting action sports or wildlife with that same focal range, they're not using this, you know, quote, budget lens. And so one of those people commented like, this isn't great for me. It doesn't let in enough light. I'm not going to be able to capture action fast enough. And I totally understand that, but they were kind of trashing it on the basis that it wouldn't work for them. But really what I want to show in my reply to that comment is like, you know, I totally understand. I get it. You're at a different place than who I'm trying to make this video for. And second, who is ending up buying this lens. If you're buying a $4,500 long range lens, you're not really interested in their $800 offering. It's just two separate audiences. But like, it was weird because that lens specifically got a lot of hate. And I'm not sure why. You know, I think those professionals might have felt threatened, maybe isn't the best word, but you know, it's just an offering that opens up that long range shooting for more people. And I think it was accepted by the community in the wrong way. And so I got like a little bit of that on that video. But to your point, my response, I want to make it specific enough so that people know the context in which I'm replying and not, you know, so they can make their decision based on that context and not just a broad piece of advice.
That makes sense. And it reminds me of the things that I encountered when I was looking for a car. Today in the Baby Gang, we were talking about tires. A bunch of people like Jeff and Conrad and a couple of people know quite a bit about cars. Isaac is looking for a new car. I just got one. Andy knows cars very well also. So, but when I was looking in forums and stuff like that, I had a Honda Civic. It was very simple. It was, you know, relatively inexpensive. No frills at all. It eventually died. This happens. I ran the thing into a natural, normal death. Well, I needed something new. And it was the same type of feedback where people are like, oh, this, you know, the performance on this thing is amazing. And I'm like, come on. I have to drive on like dirt roads and go 25 miles an hour. When I go, you know, I go into town now and again, like literally like seven times a year I go into town. What I need a car for is like to go to my parents' house and then drive to and from airports, which when life is normal, I do that a lot.
Right.
You know, if a flight is cheap in Boston or Newark or Toronto or Montreal or Buffalo or Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, that's, you know, going to be a substantial drive to get there. Well, that's what I need a car for. I'm not zipping around. I'm not hauling things. And people don't seem to understand that the selling points to one person may not matter to the other. Right. And the limitations, like in the case of this lens, the limitations very well may not factor in to somebody else, you know, who's a bit more casual or has different needs.
Yeah, that's... I feel like that's a big theme on the internet and providing advice. And I feel like in the, you know, quote, influencer economy, a little bit of that has been lost because, you know, for some people, there's benefit in, you know, providing recommendations for mass audiences. But really what I'm trying to do is like, hey, this is my recommendation, but it is literally geared toward, you know, if you have, I don't know, A, B, C, D lined up, and that's all similar to me, and that's why I got this. I don't want to ever like provide any, I just want to be very specific with my advice at the end of the day. And I think like generally parts of, I don't know, the internet has gotten away from that. It's very important, I think, as consumers and just content consumers to recognize that advice is highly specific or should be, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's the name of the game though, is figuring out what somebody needs. And like, I'm not trying to get too meta on this, but this is the basis of pretty much all education is to be able to teach somebody something effectively and develop them effectively. You need to know who they are, how they operate, and what they want. If it's a technical thing, like let's say it's algebra, well, yeah, I can probably get away with a 200-person lecture hall, and if you follow along, you're going to come out of it knowing algebra. That's fine. But for most other things that are beyond kind of an intro level, you really have to cater it to somebody's needs.
Right.
It's like that with like giving analysis and advice to people who ask about, you know, how do I develop a YouTube channel? Well, who are you? You know, what is your stuff about here? I actually did this fairly recently, and I want to make sure that I don't dox anybody. Somebody who wanted to get into in the Create Unknown community, we're talking on Discord, wanted to get into the types of stuff that that I do with Vsauce 2, that you, Dan, do with apparently the multiple podcasts you're sleeping around with. Yeah, yeah, I see. And we had a conversation, and honestly, the place you start is seemingly irrelevant things. Like, kind of, what are your interests? What kind of music do you like? What books do you like? These things, it sounds crazy, but these things reveal stuff about you that makes it easier to give advice that fits. We, through this conversation, kind of revealed that this is somebody who values and likes kind of order and structure, right?
Right.
Other people are the complete opposite of that. Like, they're allergic to, you know, here are the five steps that you need to take. Well, that would be wrong for a lot of people. Probably a better fit for this guy. But yeah, this stuff is critical to making progress on everything from a conversation to making a video stick with its audience. And that's really what people don't try to do, whether it's a forum or a Twitter thread or anything else. Like, no, I'm just going to ram my perspective down your throat and not think for a second about your circumstances or why you might value this thing differently.
Right. Part of that, I think, is maybe a good call. Is part of that laziness? Like, the good answer to provide the context is much longer, generally, I find.
Say that again. Cut out for a second.
I think part of that might be laziness, kind of that shotgun approach, right? Because to provide that good context appropriate answer is typically, I know some of my comments can look like a storybook. And like, or like if I'm giving friends or family advice on something, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh man, this is really starting to get to be a lengthy response. But I feel like sometimes that is the response that's needed. And maybe some parts of the internet allow for that better than others. A tweet, you know, if you're constrained to some characters, maybe not.
It does reveal tends to reveal the intentions of the person engaging, though. You know, if they go out of their way to do that, like, yeah, maybe you write a novel to answer a question, but at the same time, it becomes very clear that you're sincere about wanting to understand what's going on.
Sure.
You're sincere about wanting the other person to understand what you're thinking. That's a big thing. And I think most people just kind of aren't interested in doing that. They just want to have fun and, you know, criticize a thing or fist pump over a thing, whatever it is.
Right.
And yeah, this could be an episode because I look through the chat right now and Microspeen is typing. And I know this is a huge factor in how people talk about music. You know, he made the intro for this podcast. It makes a range of different types of music. I'd love to be able to probe somebody about the conversation, like the tone of music criticism, because I have a sense that it's very similar to what we're talking about.
Yeah, probably. Microspeen is 25.
He is 25, and that is the segue I was about to make, not with Microspeen being 25, but you know, when we threw you in to this trial by fire, I said that I was probably going to make you uncomfortable once or twice. Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
No.
yes, I recall this.
Purged it from your system.
I recall this.
So I'm about to do that. We, as a Create Unknown community, we need to talk about a phenomenon that I don't understand. So I'm trying to think exactly who this started with. I think it started with Monahan. About 2 weeks ago, Monahan had a birthday. Very nice. Congratulations, Monahan. Happy to celebrate your birthday. Then something happened. We got a string of Baby Gang, Dumpster Crew, just Discord server birthdays that is statistically strange. It's shocking. Tom Videoger just had one. Grinning Reaper, I believe, has one tomorrow, if I read that right. Jeff had one a couple weeks ago as well. I think Isaac had one recently. Dojangles, she's got hers in a week. Who else? We had so many. Puff, I think, is tomorrow. Ben. Ben had his birthday last week. It's almost impossible to keep track of it. Like, and I bring this up because this is something we've thought about, having made a video on birthday coincidences in The Birthday Paradox. That's actually the origin of the baby gang and the baby themed patron levels and Discord ranks and everything.
Is it?
So yeah. We were in a meeting and Spean actually asked this earlier. The question is, like, what are the odds that a room full of X number of people share, you know, two people share the same birthday in it? And it's surprisingly high. I think it's about 23 people before there's a 50% chance that two of them share a birthday. You'd think it would have to be many yeah. more. Once you get around to about 70, it is almost a statistical certainty that two of them share. So I've put like literally weeks of thought into how this works and the math behind it. And this is absolutely a statistical aberration with this number of birthdays centered around the very end of March, the very beginning of April. So I started to think, well, what happens 9 months before that? Because we know what we know how babies are made. And if you don't, that's something you can Google. I'd do it in incognito mode, but you can Google how babies are made. They take about 9 months to load properly.
Load.
This means all these people are going back to about roughly the 4th of July. That might explain something. 4th of July hot dog cookouts getting crazy for the U.S. people. But it doesn't explain Puff. It doesn't. He's German. It doesn't explain Tom Videoger, who's Australian. We have plenty of people who have no reason to celebrate the 4th of July. So my question to you, Dan, is what are the parents of Create Unknown listeners doing on the 4th of July weekend that makes this happen?
Oh, that is tough. It's almost as if...
There's an answer here, and I need to know what it is.
It's almost as if they're... the stork is flying overhead, and they're giving it a little sip or two of the alcoholic beverages, and the stork is just getting wild, right? That's what I'm seeing in my incognito mode here.
So we have... So it's possible here that and by the way, people who are listening live, you're in episode chat, give us your theories on why this happens. Oh. Sheep says that Mama put on an American flag bikini and it was inevitable. It's possible. I like the stork theory that it's sort of like, you know, Santa must have an optimal path to reach all those houses in one night. Maybe the Create Unknown has discovered where the stork is mid-year. Is that possible?
Chinchilla's just saying the summer is wild. It's just the
but it's
time.
Not summer in Australia, you know, like the seasons are swapped. So, you know, you can't say like, oh, it's, you know, the peak summer and it's hot and wild. Well, maybe it is. And I'll tell you the truth, for people in places like the Northeast, it is miserable at that point in the summer. The humidity is high. Nobody has central air. Life sucks. You don't want to be within 10 feet of someone, let alone baby making.
When you say no one has central air.
Well, I guess some people do. I've seen it on TV. But air conditioning in the summer for me.
I hear that it's a thing that people have.
So for me, I live in a somewhat windy area, and that means that I can open up the windows on two sides of the house and it makes a cross breeze through the middle. And that's kind of the best I can do. Dan the Latch has central air. I know he's up in our quadrant. You must, because you're talking about it like everybody's got it.
I'm basking in it right now, you know.
Wait, you have the air conditioning on or you have heat on?
Yeah, I have the air conditioning on right now. It got a little balmy today.
It's hot enough.
I'm on the fourth floor. It gets a little warm.
Oh, okay.
You know, I'm
that makes a
trying
difference.
To celebrate yeah. my no, first that's... first appearance on the audio track here. Treat myself to a nice even 72. It doesn't run.
Oh my God.
It doesn't run that yeah. hard during this time of year at all.
It horrifies me if I'm in a spot that is that warm. I think I've said this talking to people in the baby gang. So I keep my house at 58 in the winter because I found out that right when you go below about 58, that's when your fingers start to kind of constrict, like it's hard to type is what I'm getting at. I need to be able to type. I can always put on a sweater. You know, it's much harder to strip down. But I can always put on sweater and lined pants and all that. So yeah, I can keep it cold. But yeah, optimal for me, like when I go to a hotel room, they usually have a bottom limit. I don't know if people know this. They probably haven't tried to go that low, but like in Las Vegas, I'm in hotels quite a lot. And
I'm sure the limit most on the bottom end is pretty high there.
65.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't get below 65. And that's okay. I always set something to an even number or a multiple of five, like the dial on the radio in the car or something like that. Like this will never be at 17. It's going to be 15, 16, 18, or 20. It's just a thing, you know? So I'd like to set to 64, but I can accept 65 because it's a multiple of five.
Yeah. I mean,
I think I've just revealed, even though Kevin isn't here, I think I've just revealed what his life of working with me is actually like.
He can confirm next time. Yeah, I hear you. No, there's no reason to chill on those super uneven numbers. And that is a fairly high lower limit, I guess, for that region. It makes sense. But if you're someone who needs it colder, that's not going to help you that much.
No, and I do understand their logic because people do. They can sometimes go 2 days or more without going back to their room in a place like Las Vegas. Yeah. So what's somebody going to do? Set it down to 60 and then take off for 3 days? Like, this is insane. And almost all the rooms have massive windows. Insulation is not top notch in most of those hotels the way it would be elsewhere. So I get it. I don't like it, but I get it. Okay, so we took a 60-second break. We asked for questions, statements, topics. It may have been a mistake. We have so many pinned comments here that we came back to. But let me see. So Origins of the Baby Gang, I want to expand on that. This is from Microspeen, who is now 25. This is your birthday gift. So we had this meeting with people from Patreon, and they just explained what their kind of top tier service was and kind of selling us on that. And we were a part of that for a while. It really didn't work out for a lot of reasons. So we just went to a simple thing. But in that meeting, it was with a couple women who, they're giving us ideas about like, hey, you can do this with the community. You can do that. And we just got this idea to do a baby themed thing. Starting with the babies in that birthday paradox video. And Kevin and I are sitting there riffing about weird baby names and baby situations and whatever. And at a certain point, we just looked up and those women were just sitting there like horrified. They were so confused. They had no clue what was going on. So we were like, well, yeah, no. So yeah, we'll get back to you.
So would you like to join the baby
just
gang?
Kind of dipped. I know. We just kind of dipped out. But yeah, that was a kind of a funny moment that it paid off because Infantry and Baby Gang is, you guys make it happen. You seriously do. And it's something I look forward to when I wake up is loading up Discord and seeing what happened overnight in the Baby Gang. So thank you for that. This one is, it must be for you, Dan. Uh-oh. Must be for you because I can't imagine it would be for both of us. What is the longest time you've ever peed?
Yeah, you just couldn't imagine that would be both of us. No. You know, it's gotta be more than a minute. But probably less than five, and I imagine in the circumstances where you would urinate for more than 1 minute and less than five, you know, any number of things could be happening, and so that's probably as narrow as I can pin it. I would say
I actually really distinctly know my answer to this. About 20 years ago, I was living in Boston, and I needed to drive to my parents' house in New York to get my driver's license replaced and then be back in Boston that night. And It's about a 4.5 hour drive, something like that. I was really zipping through. I was going quite quickly, which I don't do anymore. But back, you know, when you're younger, you do some of those regrettable things. And I realized that at the pace I'm going, I can make this trip in under 3 hours. So I'm going along there, and like maybe with an hour and a half left, I really have to pee. I'm crunching the numbers. Can I afford to do this? How fast will I have to go to make up those 3 minutes? It was not going to happen. There's no way that I could stop and do it. It was a borrowed car too. So it wasn't even an option that's like, yeah, I will just piss this seat and vacuum it up later. No, like even the crazy options weren't
options. Well, hold on. Is that an option with your own car? This is news to me.
I mean, at least it would be my problem, exclusively True. My problem.
True.
Not saying it's a good option, but it would, you know, it exists. I made the decision to gun it, and I thought, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make it happen. I got there 2 hours, 59 minutes. I made it.
Wow.
It was incredible. So the problem is I pull up in the driveway. I couldn't get out of the car because I was in so much pain that just my body could not stand up because I had to go so badly. When I finally did go, I don't know how long it was. I can't even give you an estimate, but it was the longest of my life. And it also was the most relieving of my life.
Was it more than a minute, less than five?
It was more than a minute, less than five.
Yeah, I think that's a good window.
I think that's the official answer. Let's see. Oh, this one legitimately is for you, Dan. What headphones do you have?
I think the Arctis 5, maybe 7. I'm not sure. I think they were...
Is that a company? Is that a model or what?
It's a model. I don't even know the company. I'm trying to look real quick. I think they were...
Well, headphones are a thing recently. I know Lars of the First Podcast just recently bought a Bangin' set. It was an incredible sale. Trev got them too, some Sony headphones that are exceptional noise-canceling headphones. I have the Bose QC35, the Quiet Ooh. Comfort 35, and I do not regret that purchase. They make plane rides bearable. So I'm a fan of good noise-canceling headphones.
Imagine. These are SteelSeries. I should have known that. I bought them at the start of 2020 for the new job I had was going to be, jokes on me, it was going to be part remote anyway. And so I wanted to get something a little bit better than earbuds. And little did we know I would have them on 10 hours a day.
You're not alone. Boromir has the Arctis 7.
Fancy.
Also from SteelSeries. So this apparently is a thing. APM got Soundcore Life Q30 this week. I think Ben has a pair of those. They are pound for pound, dollar for dollar, probably the best headphones on the market. And if you're patient, with the price, those occasionally go on sale to a very, very reasonable price. So good job on the Soundcore APM. That is banging. We've got AirPods, Astro A40s, Corsair HS70s from Andy. But yeah, James has AirPods. He's on the go. He's working all the time anyway, so I can see where he would need buds.
I do. I have a pair of the original AirPods that I got with the phone. I do love them for a lot of stuff, just to have even only one in the ear while running around the house. I think that's, if you're in a small, relatively small dwelling, they do the job for most stuff that isn't too hardcore.
So I tend not to spend a whole lot of money on purchases I don't need, and a lot of electronic accessories fall into that category. Yeah. I did, however, and this is embarrassing but funny. I have Galaxy Buds Plus, whatever the new version of Galaxy Buds is. I have the BTS fan model. I don't know why. I've never listened to a K-pop song in my life. I don't know why the BTS ones went on sale. I don't care. Like, it makes the little bean that they charge in purple instead of, you know, whatever color. I don't even know what BTS is about. But I used them last night really for the first time. I'm able to put them underneath a face mask with ear protection when I'm working outside, and being able to hear audiobooks using a chainsaw, whatever, without any safety concerns is fantastic.
That's a throwback to the highly specific advice Yes. You can use these while...
It doesn't apply to many.
Yeah, you can use these while operating the chainsaw.
When I leave my my five-star review on those, it's going to be about equipment like that. Let's see. Chinchilla wants to know if we've charged our birds. Have you seen his series of mechanical birds on Twitter?
I haven't.
Chinchilla, for people who don't know, they're not in the Discord, Chinchilla is a shockingly impressive artist. You got to see these. So he's been posting these mechanical birds, and they vary from things that you look at and you're like, oh, okay, that's a mech. That's a robot kind of thing. And then others are very subtly mechanical. So it's a lot of fun to see what they are. But I guess your birds are not charged then. Dan,
oh my gosh. I'm looking now and these are incredible.
Aren't they cool?
And I am on zero battery, unfortunately.
With your computer?
With my birds.
Oh, your birds. Oh, okay.
But these are incredible.
Yeah, we'll pop Chinchilla's links in the description because everybody needs to see this stuff. I need to retweet it more. I am a proud patron of Chinchilla on his Patreon, and more people need to be because the art is banging. It's so good. So birds are not charged. They will be charged. Andy's asking about favorite aircraft. Do you have one? I don't know how much you know or do not know about all things air.
I don't. This is embarrassing. I don't have a favorite aircraft.
I can tell you my least favorite. My least favorite is the oldest versions of the 737. I'm not a tall guy. I know I sound like a giga chad to everybody listening. I sound like I'm maybe 6'8", 250 pounds, 2% body fat.
I've never seen you, but that's what I would have guessed.
No, I'm like 5'9", right? I'm 5'9", so I'm by no means tall. And I have been on 737s where my knees jam into the seat in front of me.
It's no good.
I was on one, a flight to Atlantic City, which was, it was a complimentary thing, so I wasn't paying, whatever. And it's a short flight.
I was going to say, that's,
so
what
that's
is that,
not
a half
a
hour?
Big deal.
Once you finally get on there?
Yeah, it's like, 52 minutes in the air. It's crazy. You spend as much time coming up and going down as you do in the air. But I was on one for a longer haul from Ukraine to Armenia, and oh my God, do I hate it. So my favorite aircraft is the one where I have room. That's it. If I have adequate room, I'm happy.
That's hard to find. I'm like you. I'm not. You would imagine I'm super tall, but I'm 5'8". And when I sit in that plane seat and it's cramped, I just feel bad for myself. And then I feel bad for everybody who's a larger human being.
Yeah. It's a socially awkward thing to be like infringing on other people's space. Yeah. You know, so if somebody's next to you, like, you don't want to fight over an armrest and all that, like, for their sake. Let's see. James asked if I've been working out. I haven't. I'm anti-exercise. I have been eating right, though, and I've begun to do actual work outside. So by the time VidCon hits in October, I believe it's October 21st, hopefully I will be as ripped as the photo that Dr. MacArthur just put in the chat. Yeah, we're going to be talking about VidCon in coming weeks, coming months. Hopefully we do a Create Unknown thing there. We're trying for that, but we'll see how it works out. But we'll keep everybody updated and we'll talk about it. I'm definitely going to be there. Kevin should be there as well. So if anybody is going to attend, if you're not in the Discord, jump in, let us know, talk to us. We'll figure something out. And if you're in the Discord, stay on top of it. Talk to us about it. Dan, this is for you. How many pounds of meat is in your freezer? Boromir wants to know.
Went through a time where I tried to eat fairly vegetarian. I would say...
Do you buy a lot of stuff in advance? Or are you not really a freezer guy?
A little bit more during the pandemic. But not really. I would say 2 pounds of meat in there. I think we've got a pound of bacon and maybe some ground beef that I typically use for either some chili or some meat sauce for spaghetti and things.
Got
Yeah.
You got to hit.
I'm not
going
to rival your
50 staples.
Pounds of freezer stash here. And I'm not going to try to pretend.
No, I organized my tuna. Anybody who follows me on Twitter saw this about a week ago. I organized my tuna on Friday night. I have like 15 pounds of tuna, if not more. It's nuts. That'll get eaten. But yeah, that's not in the freezer. That's just, you know, stored as it's stored. But in the freezer, I'd say right now, I did a massive buy on beef prices, lower than it's been in 7 years. So I stocked up. I have between beef, pork, and chicken, and little things like bacon, shrimp, whatever. I'm probably about 70 pounds right now. So that'll get me through the summer.
I have something to learn, apparently.
Yes. How many third graders, 11sies has a good one. How many third graders could you take in a fist fight?
I think I'm the size of a third grader. So, you know, I'm hoping for a good outcome 1v1. Frankly, I'm just hoping not to get my ass kicked 1v1.
I think I weigh enough that I could like bull charge them and like roll over a substantial number of them. I think I could wipe out like 8 straight away.
This is a very similar question. Chuckle Sandwich, I think, addressed this a few episodes back. They were fighting children as well. If you listen to that podcast.
That's right. Yeah. There used to be a web calculator that asked about, it asked you like 10 questions and then told you how many kindergartners you could take in a fight. That's not available anymore, but I wish I remembered my number. But I bet third graders are not small. You know, like they're about 8. 8-year-olds are kind of capable. You know, kindergartners are not, but 8-year-olds begin to matter physically. I think I probably top out at 12.
12.
You know, fatigue is going to set in fairly quickly. I'm not a fine-tuned athlete. I can't last, you know, 8 minutes of solid fighting. I couldn't last 2. So
we've got some
60
yeah,
seconds
some
between each wave.
Questions.
Yeah. Then I don't know. I'm reevaluating my physical fitness. It's terrible from sitting around all winter. I am useless. So ask me in September when I'm a well-oiled machine. Let's see. Let's say I'm trying to find one from somebody who hasn't asked. Oh, Dan the Latch, are you ready for white boy summer? And I'm hoping, Dan, that you can tell me about what the white boy summer phenomenon is. Have you seen it on Twitter?
When you say you're hoping that Dan can tell you, you're responding to Dan the Latch here or me?
You know what? Either one. I meant you. But if Dan the Latch can give the definition in Discord, that would be cool. I can't figure out what it is. Everybody's tweeting memes about white boy summer, and a lot of them are funny, but I don't know how it started.
Yeah, I'm hoping he can ping in as well. To be honest, I don't spend a whole lot of time on Twitter. I'm more of an Instagram guy.
Yeah. Well, I will say that I've had, we got rules and regulations posted for White Boy Summer. I will say that I'm a veteran of them, having naturally experienced 38 of them. Didn't really have a name. I just showed up. Andy says, TCU VidCon win. Yeah, we really are going to go into more detail about VidCon as details pop. They only announced it about a week ago. I wasn't sure it was going to happen, but it is. If somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's about October 22nd to 24th or something like that. It's a Friday through Sunday in October. It's in Anaheim. They'll probably have their Disney Day on Sunday, which is cool. I will very likely come out for a few days before and a few days after. Andy's not unreasonably far from Anaheim, so he should be able to make the trip. Some people live right in California. That'll be cool. It's going to be good to see people. It's been 2 years, and 2 years in the YouTube world is an eternity. Are you going to try to make it out?
I'm completely new to VidCon myself. Absolutely fresh. If you said October?
Yeah, late October. Yep.
And you said just bill you guys for the expenses? Yeah, I'll make it. I'll totally be there.
Yeah, you'll get the corporate card in the mail, and yeah, we'll just give you the pin and see what happens.
Great. Yeah, no, I'll see you there.
Back very quickly to White Boy Summer. Dan the Latch has posted the rules. The first one is no plaid shirts. Don't be looking like a picnic table. Well, I've already failed, and I will continue to fail because most of my button-down shirts are plaid. I hate White Boy Summer now.
You made it to rule number one. Rule number two, sneakers, Jordans, Vans, no Sperry topsiders. I can't.
I also don't have sneakers. So like I have a pair, but I never wear them. 11sies is correct that flannel is the best. I like cotton. I'm okay with cotton. It's just got to be soft. But yeah, Plaid, I'm literally disqualified in the first three words of the rules and regulations. This is directed specifically to Dan from Dr. MacArthur. What are your opinions on MacArthur? I assume he means Douglas MacArthur. I mean, that's the only MacArthur person I can think of.
I don't even know. Who is that?
He was a general in World War II, responsible in the Pacific, Philippines, around there, and then really kind of made a wave in the years after World War II.
So, yeah, as someone coming to this completely fresh, good wave, bad wave, I'm taking your entire word for it.
Depends on who you ask. Yeah, it's really complex. Some people think that he was a no-nonsense aggressor in a good way, the kind of person you'd want to run the military. Other people think that he was a self-styled dictator who could have eventually organized a military coup against the president. I mean, incredibly divisive figure. So Dr. MacArthur in the chat puts this really nicely. Good wave in the eyes of the public. He was wildly popular with the American public due to his success and style and everything. Bad wave in the eyes of Truman. And that was the problem. He clashed very strongly with Harry Truman over post-war policy having to do with the military.
Interesting.
So you got to pick a side. Are you pro-Truman or are you pro-MacArthur or are you anti-MacArthur?
Nope. I'm going to ask for some slack. I'm going to have to do my research and get back to you. I will not commit to this on the spot.
So you're pro-fence rider.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hearing.
And, you know, chances are I'm not going to be back for a long, long time. So I'm just going to disappear off into the sunset.
Well, it's one of the more complex 20th century figures, if not the most complex. It's really nuanced. And so when people in Discord do talk about their personal passions, and MacArthur is one of Dr. MacArthur's interests, it's pretty neat to see the rabbit holes that they go into and what they do with it. That's awesome. So keep talking, weirdos. We like it. This is good from Isaac. You got to pull up the pinned comments here. I'm going to describe this for audio listeners. Disneyland is advertising a hot dog stuffed inside of stuffed inside of a dill pickle that is fried and served with a side of peanut butter. So this has like a breaded crust on the outside, like a chicken finger or something. So you've got hot dog surrounded by dill pickle, surrounded by breadcrumbs that you dip in peanut butter. This is on a stick. What's your position on this, Dan?
So you've left out an important detail here that I'll call attention to.
I did.
The defibrillators are extra. They don't come included.
Oh.
So it's kind of a question whether or not you have money to afford them. I think I'm into it. I don't know about the peanut butter. I don't think I'm dipping it. I don't think I'm spreading any of that PB on this pickle. But otherwise,
Isaac is working,
I think I'm into it.
Yeah. He works escape room stuff. He makes YouTube videos about escape rooms, does 60-second escape room views. Very cool. He's into two things to the max: Disneyland, or all things Disney, and escape rooms. He's working now, and that's a shame because I want to know how much this thing
is. That's a great question, too.
I think there's a price. Yeah, there's a price at which you buy this and eat it, and a price that you pass on. What is your price?
So knowing that this stuff is generally marked up, can we agree on that?
Disney prices are not going to be cheap.
And I've been to Disney in a long, long time, or even as an adult, technically. Let's say sub $6, I'm all into it. It's an experience.
Oh, there's no way this is under $6.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not buying it.
You think?
I would have said $8.
That is on the fence.
My guessing price.
Because there's not a lot of, like, if we're talking food here, like nutrients, there's not a lot here, right? Unless you eat the peanut butter separately.
Well, there's protein in the hot dog.
And
that's probably, and the peanut butter. So I have a theory on this. This is carefully constructed to be palatable for virtually all people. Obviously, if meat is a problem for you, you can't do it. But there's nothing in here that violates kosher laws. If this hot dog is all beef, you know, Kashrut, the max, it's good to go. There's no dairy that it's going to interfere with. The peanut butter is fine. I guess if there's a dip for the breadcrumbs, then you may violate. But it's actually acceptable for all sorts of eaters. That impresses me. Somebody put a lot of thought into this.
I like that point. And another great point here, Dr. MacArthur. You know, back to that point, I've already gotten into Disneyland. What's another $2? My wallet has been ravaged. Why would I let that be the make or break? I hear that. I understand. I guess.
Elevensies posted a cross section. Did you see this?
No.
Oh, it's glorious when it's cut in half. Yeah, we need to find out how much this is. If we do go to Disney Day at VidCon, I am going to eat one of these. I want to try it.
I guess I splurge. I would 13. Ooh.
Is that confirmed? Is it $13?
That's a lot. I can't do 13. That's where I draw the line at 13. I mean, I draw it earlier.
That's
than
a
13,
lot of money for.
I can't do 13.
I would max a pickle dog is $13. Wow. There's the panko crusted pickle. You got to be kidding me. That's a lot. I would have topped out at 10. But to the peanut butter part, I know that sounds weird, but many months ago, like in 20, might've been 2019, Isaac talked about how good, peanut butter is on hot dogs and that it was something that we all needed to try. So it must be a thing. It's a thing, I guess. Pickle dog.
I can't do 13. That's outrageous.
This is a question that neither of us is going to answer. I'm going to throw it out there to show the depths of degeneracy. Speen asks, how big is your pickle dog? Yeah. We're going to pass on that, Speen. Sorry to ruin your birthday by not talking about wieners, but here we are. Let me see.
Calling for the arrest of Speen in the chat.
Yeah. How was the pee break that we took? It was adequate. It was good. It's always tough when it's rushed. You know, you got to get back to the desk, get back on the air. But I assume that you had a 5 out of 10 experience as well.
Yeah. I mean, the alternative was that I haven't invested in kind of a piss. What does Michael Reeves say? What is it called?
A piss jug?
Yeah. I haven't invested in one of those. So yeah. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10 because my alternative was not so great. I don't have a piss jug, so it wasn't going to be a good scene.
It's literally a jug you don't throw away. You don't have to invest anything in this. All you have to do is invest a moment with your eye choosing the container that's going to stick around.
I don't have those containers hanging around. Yeah. It was a 6 out of 10, my experience.
I'm trying to think. Yeah. Gatorade, wide mouth Gatorade bottle is a popular choice, I think. Powerade, you know, all those things are popular with the gamers. And welcome to Tom Videogre, who has made it. I know the time is tough with him. His vessel of choice is the Gatorade bottle.
Right.
It's confirmed.
Tom approved.
Off the top of your head, yes. If Tom approves it, that's a thing. Wide mouth Gatorade, yes. That's right. Off the top of your head, you're doing the calculation, Dan. This is from Andy. How many days until June 17th? You've got 5 seconds.
60.
Okay, go.
60.
60. It's got to be closer to 80, because what? April's 30... Let's say 30 a month. April, May, that's 60, and then 17 then. 31. Does May have 31 as well? Yeah, I think so.
Maybe?
Yeah, it does. So that's 62, and then...
I only had 5 seconds.
And then 17 is 79 days. That was harder than it should have been.
I plugged that into, the Googles. The Wolfram Alphas is what I would put that
in. I got it wrong, because April only has 30 days, so... 78. God, what a useless. They were trying to get us to say the gamer number. And I think they miscalculated. You rascals.
What they don't know is on that piss break, we collaborated on this comment and played dumb. Okay, we know exactly how many days until June 17th. Okay. But
Andy asks about if we can get any voice actors on the show. Yeah, we've actually talked in the last few weeks about what we want to do in the rest of the year. We really want to broaden things. Musicians would be awesome. There are a bunch of really cool possibilities there, from older people to newer ones. Voice acting, That's solid. All sorts of creative arts. There are really compelling stories across the board. So yeah, you're going to get voice actors, and people in other fields are going to get their chosen personalities too. Dan can attest that we're in a little bit of a limbo on booking. We're trying to sort out a couple contractual things. But yeah, once we get the green light, then we're kind of going to blow it out.
You put me in a weird spot. I can attest to it, and I can't say anything more. Okay.
Yeah, that's it. All you have to do is attest.
He is not lying to you.
You have to confirm that there are things you can't discuss, but you have to confirm they exist. That's the tightrope walk. I can confirm
this fact, and that's all I can do.
But it's something that should deliver 50 to 52 uninterrupted episodes over the next year. And that's why we needed to take a very quick break, because we, skipping a week there. It was a good time with Vsauce 2 work, but also the likelihood that we will skip a week in the future is incredibly low. So we took it when we could. And here we are. Speen's got a valid question. We've only got a couple more. What's a guy got to do to get some salami in here?
I haven't had salami in years.
It's been a while for me. Has been years, but it's been pre-pandemic.
Yeah, that was a pastime for me. We used to do that big time for school lunches.
It's good. It's cheap. It's nutritionally, I love it because it's got a fair bit of fat. I love fat in terms of nutritional value. You know, it's got some protein, pretty high on salt, which I don't care about. Really solid in that sense. So I'm a salami fan, but yeah. Pepperoni is really where it's at for me.
Yeah. I have...
Hold up. You like salami and you don't like pepperoni?
No, I like pepperoni.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I probably like pepperoni better, especially cut as lunch meat, like real thin and larger slices that you can mix in with other meats. Yeah. I'm into that.
Oh, yeah. There's a company called The Sausage Guy. They're out of Buffalo. And they sell all the supplies to make sausage, which is, I get sausage supplies from them, but I've never done curing of pepperoni or salami. I've never made it. And that's something that I would like to do in the coming year, is really make, like, put a good effort toward making pepperoni properly.
So that you can bring it to VidCon.
Yeah, that's best. I can bring the pepperoni to VidCon. Yes. Another food one. And this is good, especially if you've seen the Vsauce 2 video with the toothpaste sandwich, which Kevin did eat. Perfect composition and preparation method for a toasted sandwich. Do you have any?
I don't. And I have to admit, I haven't seen that video yet. I've seen the thumbnail, but as I understand it, it just came out.
So you're excused.
I don't toast a lot. I'll toast an English muffin, and that's typically what I'll do, a breakfast sammy on. But other than that, I don't, and a bagel occasionally. Other than that, I don't do a whole lot of toasting myself.
I will say butter in a pan, then lightly toasted pumpernickel.
Oh wow!
On both sides, buttery toasted pumpernickel, and then what I put in the middle of it. Honestly, just about anything flies with that. So yeah, if you can nail the pumpernickel and butter part, life is good.
You're breaking on a pan.
I've always got one out anyway. Here's one of the final ones. So this is also from James. This one's real. This is a heady question. Which is the worst of the seven deadly sins? Do you have a go-to worst sin straight away?
Sloth is one of them, right?
As you're thinking about it. Yeah, sloth is one. I'm going to list out the seven here. What do we got? I had to look this up to make sure I got them all. Pride, greed, wrath, envy, lust, gluttony, and sloth.
I think for me, sloth, maybe.
Why does sloth rank number one?
I think it's number one because you can solve a lot of things while avoiding that. I don't know.
That's really similar to my answer. For me, it's envy, because I think a whole lot of these other problems are a consequence of envy. So it's very similar in mindset. So you're saying sloth is bad because you can prevent so many of these other things if you don't engage in slothful behavior. I feel similarly about envy. I think envy drives the worst of what we see on social media and political discussion and everything that sucks. Dan the Latch says envy too.
Envy. We got some wrath votes.
Yeah, Tom says that is the start of all wars. That's valid. Wow. So I'm in the minority here. APM says sloth is his curse.
By sloth.
So we have several votes for wrath. We have two votes for envy and one for, let's see. Oh, no, you were about tied here with sloth and wrath. Mm-hmm. Pride, Andy says. Yeah, so it's kind of interesting as these results come in. It's really hitting them all. I mean, it's spread across here. It's almost as if they're all bad.
It's almost as if they're grouped for a reason.
Let me put it this way. Since they are all bad, and I think a lot of them are related. If there's one that you could avoid, like eliminate from your life, which one would it be? Or the possibility of it happening, which would it be?
I think that's boring, but maybe I think sloth. I don't know. Does it change for you?
A lot of problems go away. No, I don't think mine change, but let me double check. Again, we got pride, greed, wrath, envy, lust, gluttony, and sloth. A couple of these things are not major factors for me. I don't have much of a problem with gluttony, for example. Or greed, that's not a tremendous influence for me compared to some of the others. I don't know. This is one of those things where I feel like somebody who knows you very well should answer it
for
you.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, because I look at this and I think, well, I don't really envy a whole lot of people. I don't think about it like that. Somebody else with an outside perspective may very well be able to prove me wrong. So so ask your friends and family, enemies maybe even, what they think your deadliest of the seven sins are, what you need to work on. That would be, what possible conversations could result from that?
What, deep ones, hopefully.
Yeah, Sheep says expect an awkward conversation. I think that conversation is probably going to go sour unless you have an extremely comfortable relationship with a significant other or brother or sister or somebody who you have those honest discussions with. Everyone says gluttony. No, Sheep, everybody didn't say gluttony. We were across the board. Andy brings up us talking about wieners. Maybe that is our latent lust or inability to talk about wieners as we were asked. Maybe that says something about us.
I mean, our lust. Well, either our way, lust stopped at a price, and it was $8 to $10.
That's true. The gluttony stopped there. Now, would we be envious of the person who did spend on the stuffed dill pickle? I would be. If I thought 13 is too much, and I see some guy eating it in front of me, I would think like, "Damn, I want
to think what it must be like." To think that this was a total go at $13. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if we can top examining the seven deadly sins. So this is probably a good time to wrap up. Dan, thank you for coming on short notice. Kevin will be back. We'll have a guest next week. This was pretty good. It's been nice to just be able to talk to everybody again. We haven't done this since dinner with the babies around Thanksgiving. I think we're looking at 4 solid months since we've just had kind of a hangout session where we talk a little bit about YouTube stuff, media things, career stuff, all the important things, and then the frivolous things, which I love. So I'm glad everybody got to spend a little time with you, Dan. I hope you enjoyed jumping on.
I love this. I'll take pretty good. That highly exceeded my expectations.
The problem is that now in the next week, we're going to start talking to you about the podcast that you need to start to have. So get the gears churning. It's going to happen.
Right on
Chinchilla
that.
Points out. Start thinking about it because you absolutely should have one. Chinchilla reminds us all to charge our birds. That's good. I support that. Check out the links that we pop in, whether it's Dan's channel, Chinchilla's Patreon, any of the others that we've mentioned. We'll put them in there. And we will be back next week for now. Oh, wait. No. Are you still there,
Dan? I'm still here.
Okay, good. There's a final question. Dan, what is your fursona?
Oh,
I can't. can't believe we almost forgot this.
Out of all the guests, I should know this was coming, or I should have had something prepped.
You almost escaped.
I don't have anything.
You got to have something. You've got to have something. Here's, I'll stall for you
Please.
For a moment, because this is a real question. I know somebody, and was this, I can't think back far enough, but somebody talked about whether reptiles count.
Scalies,
we found out that scalies.
Yeah,
we found out that scalies are valid. They exist. So, do mechanical animals count as furries? Oh, Isaac is here. Good timing, Isaac. So, something like, can you be a mechanical bird and have that considered a fursona, like a mech thing? That could be a valid option.
You're throwing me options that I didn't even consider before this exact moment. So
it's cute that you pretend that you've never thought
about
this.
I've only taken notes from all of our guests about their personas, and this is the first time it's occurred to me that I need to have one on the spot. I'm going to go with, I was recently on a brief local trip. And I was trying to photograph the Milky Way for the first time in any kind of nice way. And
interesting.
Yeah. In the deep depths of the night, there was a beaver at this state park that has always scared me. You know, I'll be setting up the time.
Why is it
scary? Well, because it splashes in the lake without notice, like very loudly.
Oh, that sound is that slap on the water. Is a really unique sound. If somebody
and we're talking 3 a.m., you know, I've adjusted light wise. I've got the time lapse trying to capture the Milky Way rolling, and you get hit with that slap, and I'm taking this thing off of a bridge, and so that slap is like underneath me. But I really on
that's
this
weird. That's unsettling.
It is on this trip. I really grew close to that beaver, and I got some pics. I'm gonna say a beaver. Like I'm into that tail. I could imagine myself with that tail. Is that appropriate?
How? I think that's great. And I am seeing a beaver that has like a massively oversized tail. So they have big tails anyway. But what if it's like three times the size of a normal beaver tail? Imagine the slap on the water from that sound.
Epic. Bone chilling.
Yeah, it would go for miles. Elevensy says they have pretty sweet homes.
They do.
They have great skills. This is not a bad animal. I'm surprised nobody's chosen it before now.
Oh, wow. We're getting all sorts of beaver stuff here in the chat.
Yeah, we've got beaver memes. Hopefully everybody here keeps it clean. We don't want the bad
beaver
memes.
No.
But yeah, they're pretty sweet though. Yeah, look, they're cool. They're fluffy. They're big. They look
awesome.
That's
all I've got on the spot. That's as far as
that's good.
It has
I like it.
Progressed.
So your fursona is a beaver.
We can check back in a year and see how I've added some detail to that.
When we check in a year, you had better have the full fursuit. You'll have attended conventions wearing it. You'll have a name. I'm sure Isaac can hook you up with the people who sew those
things. I hope
so.
They're not cheap.
It's only like 2,000. No, they're only like 2,000, 2,500, I think. That's what he said. So sell a lens or two. Get a little scratch
sell
together
a lens.
And start working on your custom
I make that 2 weeks
suit.
Working for the Create Unknown.
yeah this this is where somebody needs to Google like how long days are on other planets so we can get the proper number of years of TCU work on Earth. All right, well, now that we've gotten the most important question out of the way, it is time to close. We will be back next week. Kevin will be back. We'll have a guest. We'll be back to normal. Thank you for sticking around, asking a million questions, doing the back and forth. It was good. And now I get to say this, that 85 times, 84, 85 times he said it and I haven't. I've never had to say it. See you, Space Cowboys. Thanks for listening to The Create Unknown. We'd like to extend a huge thank you and congratulations to the Tots and Dumpster crew who save tiny little lives every month. A tremendous shout out to our elite baby gang, Trevsdad, Boromir, Botdogs, Chinchilla, Isaac, Conrad, James, Jeff Davis, Patrick Pister, Baseweight, and Dojangles. And thank you to our grizzled, battle-hardened child infantry, Jen Mephisanti, Kevin Menard, Mikhail Steinke, Risebread, Sean Malone, Triple Question Mark, Monahim, Ryan Kinder, Sheep, and Maruko. Thank you as well to our producer and editor, Ben Webster, and to our media manager, Dan Yosua. The Create Unknown is an Unknown Media production.